Welcome to the One For You podcast. This episode is something very special, something we've never done before, at least I think so. It is an episode dedicated to the work of one director. And I know we did the Kill Bill episode, but that doesn't count because it was just like one movie. But this time we have two different movies by the same director, because this episode is dedicated to the Oscar-winning Chloe Zhao. Her movie Nomadland has finally made it over here, so naturally we have to discuss it. And because we just couldn't get enough of her, we are pairing it with her previous movie, The Rider. My name is Olivia Cionameo, and today I'm joined by Alan Motley.
Hi!
Hello! So, yeah, welcome back to this very special episode. I mean, you kind of turned it into this episode, right? So, like, because I picked Nomadland as the new release, and then you picked The Rider as the gem. So, are you a big fan of Chloe Zhao's?
I am. I call myself a fan, but I mean, she's directed 3 feature films and I've only seen 2 of them, even though her very first one was on Mubi for a few weeks, but I just kind of missed that one. But, you know, any excuse to rewatch The Rider is good for me.
Fair enough. Okay, but before we get into that, let's talk about what else we've been watching. I'm sure you have a long list, Alan, but like, what is it that you want to talk to us about today?
I have, ever since like there was a sale at a Next Libris that was closing, I've had the Blu-ray of Attack the Block by Joe Cornish on my shelf, and in all those years I never watched it, and the other night I thought I need something short and fun, and then I just go to my DVD shelf and go, okay, so what haven't I seen from the A's? And Attack the Block jumped out at me and I watched it and I really, really liked it. Very fun alien invasion movie. Very British, or rather very London, and starring a very young John Boyega. And yeah, I had a blast. Don't really know how I feel about that there's going to be a sequel, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fun movie. I mean, I've seen it once. It was a while ago. I think it actually was like, came up on TV and I watched it, but I really enjoyed it. So yeah, that's a good one. I, once again, have turned to television because I was in need of some comfort watching. And then for some reason, I thought I should rewatch Broadchurch, wherein a tiny town is destroyed by the murder of a child. Because that's very comforting.
I was just
going to
say, comfort watching, like the first thing I would have picked. I haven't even seen this series.
Yeah, well, I think it's because I really like Olivia Colman and David Tennant as like this great detective duo. And they have this very contentious relationship. And I really enjoy that. And so I think, and because I already know what happens, it's not as stressful, right? So that was my comfort watching. Can really recommend it. Unfortunately, if you live in Switzerland, it's going to leave Netflix like at the end of the month. So if you haven't checked it out yet, you should do it now. It's really good.
I think my mom might even have the DVDs. So I have to ask her, and if she doesn't, then I will be right on this.
Yeah, right. You should overcome your I don't know, dislike of TV shows for this one. Yeah,
really, I mean, good. Broadchurch isn't like it didn't run for 12 seasons. So no, I think it didn't. I'm good. I'm good for that.
Yeah, there's only 3 seasons. Each has like 8 episodes, so that's like, that's nothing.
British TV culture, I love
yes,
it so much.
It's great. Okay, so let's talk about our new release, Nomadland, as we've already mentioned numerous times, directed by Chloe Zhao. It's also written by her and also edited by her, so she did a lot. And it's based on a book, so a nonfiction book by Jessica, I would say Bruder, because I speak German, yeah. But I don't think that's how they pronounce it.
Bruder?
Okay.
Probably not brother, but...
yeah. So she wrote a book called Nomadland, and basically in it she explored the lives of van dwellers in the U.S. in the aftermath of the recession of like 2008. And this movie is basically a fictionalized version, semi-fictionalized version of this. So following the economic collapse of like a company town in Nevada, we have Fern, who's played by Frances McDormand, who sort of packs her van and she then sets off, well, the official synopsis says exploring the road, but I feel like it's more like she goes where the work is and she lives and she lives in her van while she does that. And basically, this movie follows Fern around as she, you know, learns about this lifestyle, because it's obviously you have to learn to be able to live on your own like this, and the relationships that she forms along the way. So it explores both the reasons and the consequences of this lifestyle.
Sounds accurate.
Hooray. And just so we get that out of the way, obviously many accolades for this movie. It won the Golden Lion at Venice, People's Choice in Toronto. It won Best Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress. So like, people like this movie, is what I'm saying. Yeah, so how do you feel about this? So because I think we both saw the film at the Zurich Film Festival last year, and I'm not sure, we might have quickly talked about it in our special episode then, but this is at least the second time that I've seen it, and same for you?
Third time.
Okay, yeah, so how have your feelings towards the movie evolved or changed?
It's a good question. Like, I saw it, as you said, at the Zurich Film Festival on, like, the biggest possible screen, and I was absolutely blown away by it. Then I rewatched it shortly before the Oscars, because I had a screener, forced it on my parents, and obviously watched that in, like, the TV in the living room, so not as blown away by it, but still thinking it's extremely, extremely good. And then this week I rewatched it on the not as large a screen as originally, but still a sizable screen. And I was blown away once more. So I think it's a movie that really, that is like works in any medium, but it really, really comes alive on the biggest screen possible. And what also made me enjoy it even more this third time around is that this is the first time that I've watched it in the knowledge that Chloe Zhao's big directing idol is Werner Herzog. And I think that made me, or that helped me make sense of some of the things that maybe struck me as not like negative, but that struck me as, I don't know, that struck me as they stick out of the movie when I saw it the second time. But we might talk about it.
What? So, no, like what? Because, I mean, you're the Werner Herzog expert, so...
So, there was this discourse, as there always is with, like, Oscar frontrunners. Mm-hmm. There was this discourse among film critics that, you know, took issue with the way in which the movie mixes fiction and documentary, for example, so that some people, like, took the rather negative view or the negative reading that it's essentially millionaire actress Frances McDormand listening to poor people's stories.
Okay, you know what? I had a similar reaction when I saw it the first time. I mean, so not... So because what I felt was like it was a bit jarring because you could tell that someone or some of them, like Frances McDormand and David... how do we pronounce that?
Strathairn, I think.
Strathairn. are professional actors and others are not. And that sometimes it feels like it's a talking heads documentary when, you know, the people, so some of the van dwellers talk about like their experiences, like what brought them here or what life on the road is like. And then sometimes it felt like I was in a documentary. But then I also wasn't. And I found that jarring the first time around. And I still see it the second time around, but it doesn't bother me so much, maybe because I knew what to expect.
I think I really enjoyed the first time. I really enjoyed the talking heads format because it is so jarring. But I think it was the acting things that, you know, the acting bits or the explicit acting bits that jumped out at me the first time. But as I said, like with the Herzog factor in mind, I thought it really like it really fell into place for me because there is it felt very much like this ecstatic truth, like finding truth in fiction, and on the other hand, finding kind of the unreality in reality, which you get when you mix like fiction, film, and documentary, which is something that Herzog experimented with a lot. Like, what comes to mind is Where the Green Ants Are, which is essentially a fictionalization of a trial by an Aboriginal tribe in Australia, where he used both actors and people involved in that lawsuit, in that trial. And that is like seen as like a big step in, you know, the history of that mode. And I think like viewing it through that lens really helped me. For example, like there is a scene where Frances McDormand talks to Bob Wells, like this van dweller guru, where he ostensibly talks about like the real suicide of his son, and she recounts a probably not entirely fictional, because like her character is probably a composite character from Jessica Bruder's book, but like a not, like this is not Frances McDormand's life. And the first two times it kind of felt like an odd choice to have this like super raw, super sincere testimony from Bob Wells versus the screenplay, like the explicitly scripted monologue of Frances McDormand. But now the third time around, I really think that this disconnect to a certain extent is really in keeping with that ethos of filmmaking, that, you know, even a documentary is going to be staged to a certain extent, and is going to be, for lack of a better word, fake to a certain extent. So really leaning into that disconnect and having the fiction collide with the truth, and, you know, getting some sort of poetic truth out of that clash. And I found that this third time, I found this really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So basically, through the theory, you have a better appreciation now of the movie. Okay,
it's almost like I work in academia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would go that far for me, because and like what you say about the acting bits being like acty, I know what you mean, and I think it was still there for me sometimes. I felt like, oh, now Frances McDormand is like, oh, she's doing this and she's doing that, and oh they're in the Amazon warehouse. Oh, are these all real people? How do we react to just having an actor in there, you know, acting along with their lives and so on? And yeah, so I don't think I am fully, I have fully resolved all of these questions for me, but I found it less irritating this time around, I have to say.
And something that struck me all three times that I watched this movie, and I don't know whether that's just, I don't know, me, whether that's my brain chemistry at the moment, but it also happened with The Rider for the first time, I think, so maybe it is my brain chemistry at the moment, but it's like, sometimes I just found myself like on the verge of tears, and I didn't even know why. Like, there wasn't like any music playing, there wasn't anything particularly sad happening. I was just like super into the emotion of a not really emotional scene, and I don't know what to do with that, but I will credit the movie with it.
I mean, I think it's fair enough that it would elicit emotions like this. We've been talking about it in a fairly dry way. But it is very emotional, as you say, especially the testimonials, you know, by the somewhat perhaps fictionalized, but also not fictionalized, actual people. There's a lot of emotion in there. And I think also like the vistas, you know, of the landscape, evoke emotion. They're beautiful, but they're also stark and cold and hostile sometimes. And I think maybe that's something that could evoke emotions like that. But I mean, but maybe it's also just your brain. I don't know.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's all my brain. So.
What? Yeah, and also because sometimes it felt like so that the tone was a bit melancholy. Not sad, but sometimes it's melancholy because it's not a movie, I think, that is saying like, oh, behold, the specter of capitalism that destroys all lives and they are now broken down individuals. It is critical of the way that capitalism works in the US right now. But it isn't angry. It's not an angry movie, but it's also not a super sad movie. But I think sometimes it's melancholy, and this is like heightened by having Frances McDormand. She walks around like she's, or Fern walks around like she's, like she's a ghost, because she wears this white dress or nightie, and it looks like she's a ghost that's haunting the land, and she's melancholy but also content.
Yeah, I feel that really summarizes it well, because the movie is, as you say, it's not an anti-capitalist screed. I will probably also talk about this when we talk about the writer, but I think Chloe Zhao has a very keen sense of unpacking both the allure and the pitfalls of, like, to put it simply, the American dream. Like, that she sees the allure, she sees the, why these ideas of, like, both freedom and also economic success, why they are alluring to people, why they still are the things that people think of when they think of the US, but on the other hand, that this, like, this, it's a dream, it's an ideal, it's an illusion, it's something that is tied to your race, your class, your financial situation. And I think the movie navigates this space between buying into the myth, but also questioning the myth really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I don't know. I just picked this up, like, I saw it out of the corner of my eye somewhere on Twitter or whatever, that people were like, oh, it's, or maybe it was even on Tumblr, I have to say, but people were like, ugh, clearly this movie is, like, in favor of Amazon because they work at Amazon and it doesn't say, like, fuck you, Amazon, out loud. And I was like, but no, this is just a more subtle movie than you give it credit for.
Like, yeah.
It is making a point. If you think about this, like, because she goes to work at a Amazon warehouse. Sorry, that was dark. But she,
potato, potato.
And she lives, a lot of people live in their vans or mobile homes or whatever while they work there. And it's like short work because it's seasonal, and then they leave again. And, you know, nobody's saying, like, all hail Amazon, thank you for your job.
Yeah.
Your jobs. It's not like that at all.
That controversy was probably very localized, but still very, very, very frustrating.
Right? It's so weird. Anyway, but what I find very interesting as well is, like, so instead of, like, a turning of the seasons, you kind of have that as well, but you have, like, a turning of the seasons in terms of, like, work, right? Because she always, Fern always has these limited engagements, basically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she works in the Amazon warehouse because it's probably over Christmas and that's when people order lots of stuff. And then she goes to work in a beet harvest thing, and then this and then this. And how, like, this natural turning of the seasons has been overlaid by the turning of the work seasons.
Yeah. Anyway. And then that, again, undercuts, like, this idea of freedom to a certain extent, because there's, like, one of the selling points of van dwelling, or one of the stories that you tell yourself to a certain extent, maybe also, is that at least you are free. You are free to go where you want. But then, yeah, as the movie shows, that to a certain extent is also still tied to capital, because, yeah, you are free to move across the road, but at the end of the day, you still have to follow the money to a certain extent in order to survive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, as we said before, like, the movie won, like, tons and tons of awards, and, like, in the movie lovers bubble, everyone has been talking about it for, like, a year or so, at least it feels like. And then I was talking to some other people who are not in this bubble, and I was like, oh, I'm going to see Nomadland again, and they were like, what's that? You know, they hadn't even heard of it. And so I'm wondering now, because specifically about this movie, because it was also a very special, like, year in terms of, like, movie going, obviously, because the cinemas were closed. And it might have been a chance for like less blockbustery movies to come to the forefront because there were no fewer blockbusters. Mm-hmm. And then maybe, you know, you could say Nomadland maybe is one of those. But like, I wonder if, you know, all these accolades and all the columns in newspapers that have been dedicated to it, do they ultimately like make a difference? Like, are people going to watch this movie? Because it's not like, you know, Green Book that's like, mm-hmm, supposedly easy to like. I don't know why people like it, yeah, but people like it. But you know what, mm-hmm, I mean, right?
Yeah. That's a good question. I feel that we may have to wait for the actual performance, because while I like your evidence is still at this point very anecdotal,
obviously, because
I can Maximum Cinema organized or co-organized a preview this week, and it was sold out, and it was mainly filled with people of the over 50 demographic. So I think, at least in that generation, I think the newspaper and general awards buzz might still hold some sway. But yeah, I could see it being a hit with the older generation, because like older people also like Frances McDormand. I think the combination of Frances McDormand and won 3 Oscars, including Best Picture, might be enough to make it a respectable draw, but probably, yeah, not something in the Green Book category, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, yes, my anecdotal evidence comes from talking to young folk. So, you're right, there might be also like a generational divide. And, you know, like, because it's so specific also about like this economic crisis in 2008, you know, like young people, like, they don't remember. Young people don't remember what it was like. But, you know, but you're right, like older people or of people of a certain generation, you know, they might also have been like affected personally in like their professional life or financially speaking, or you know, in terms of their housing.
Yeah, and like losing your job at, I don't know, 55, for example, just like from my family experience, I think this is something that, for example, my mother can relate to extremely well. So I would expect her to be like very interested in this movie, even though she doesn't really care about the Oscars and stuff.
So you really like the movie, right?
I do.
Okay. Because I think it's interesting to talk about, and I think it's an important movie in that sense, you know, also to have like people on screen that we don't often see on screen. But I'm not sure that I will just watch it to enjoy myself, or rather the movie.
I mean, fair enough, but I mean, you've seen it twice now and you liked it both times, so...
I've mellowed. I think the first time I was pretty not in the liking camp.
Okay.
But I've mellowed now, so... Okay.
But yeah, I see what you mean. Like, it's not a comfort movie, and as I said, it really does play better when you see it on the big screen. I feel like it'll be one that I look back on very fondly and will also revisit, especially on a big screen when I get the chance. But, you know, like, for example, speaking of like movies that I really, really like, but that I don't know in terms of revisiting, like, I've seen Portrait de la Jeune Fille en Feu, I think, 4 or 5 times, but I've always seen it on the big screen and I haven't seen it on the small screen yet, and I'm kind of afraid of doing that because I am afraid that it will lose some of its luster. And with Nomadland, I know for a fact now that the small screen experience is slightly less overwhelming than the, or slightly less enthusing than the big screen experience. So I don't know.
Portrait, like, you have your emotions baked in now, because if you've already seen it 5 times, like, you have your responses, like, you're conditioned with your response, so maybe it will be, like, less of a difference, but yeah.
I'll try it sometime.
Yes, you should. okay, so Nomadland is definitely one for Ellen, and I think I would say, like, yes, it's also one for me.
in terms of would you recommend people
yes, see it? Yes, you watch it. I won't watch it again anytime soon, but yes, you should watch it. Okay, so that brings us to the gem session where we talk about an older movie, so there will be spoilers. Alan, you picked this one, so introduce it, please.
I shall. So an old movie, ancient, from 2017. as we said, also by Chloe Zhao, it's The Rider. The Rider is a Western, sort of, a contemporary Western, set in the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, and it stars Brady Jandro as Brady Blackburn, and he is like the many characters in Nomadland. He plays kind of a heightened, fictionalized version of himself, as I think all of the actors in The Rider do. So there's no Frances McDormand-like present here. And Brady is a young, what do we call them? Rodeoist? Rodeo rider?
Rodeo rider?
He rides the rodeo. he has suffered an accident where he broke his skull, and he is in rehabilitation. He is trying to get his strength back, but it's turns out that it is probably not that likely that he will ever ride in a rodeo or even ride in general again. And it's both the story of coming to terms with that and of living in relative poverty in this reservation with his father and autistic sister and trying to survive on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess you'd call it a revisionist Western. And revisionism is like your forte, so how would you say it does revise this genre?
Well, I would say it revises the Western hero or the figure of the Western protagonist quite explicitly, because the movie is essentially, it sets itself up for this big redemptive arc almost, where everybody tells Brady that he can't ride again, he will never ride again, and he just can't believe it, and he just keeps at it. And then the big emotional coda of the movie is that no, he decides against it, he will not ride again, he chooses life, he chooses family, he chooses being there for his friend who is disabled after a similar accident befell him. And through that, it kind of turns this, again, this very American ideal of just being stubborn and doing your own thing, even if the world tells you not to, it turns that on its head by saying, you know, it's okay to reassess your dreams. It's okay to not do the thing that you think you were born to do. And I found that now I've seen this movie also like 3 times now, I think, and I found that to be really, really powerful, especially this time around.
Yeah, and I guess it's also revisionist in terms of like who it puts at the center, because
yeah.
Brady and his family are from the Lower Brule Sioux tribe, so, you know, and this heritage is also part of the movie. Mm-hmm. So yep. I think that's also an important point. And
true.
Yeah, and I think it's again, yeah, like you say, questioning this American idea, this the American dream as well, right? That like, well, the cowboy is this heroic figure, is a figure of masculinity, of daring, of bravery. But, you know, they're living in poverty and they're really, really struggling. And him, you know, doing the rodeo is partly because he loves it, but also perhaps to make some money, or at least the horse training, because he's also a horse trainer. So it again, you know, interrogates that as well. And I think it's very interesting in like how it also deals with these themes of masculinity, because Brady is like this very, very gentle man. Like he's very loving towards his sister, He's a great friend, you know, and he goes to see Lane Scott, who's the friend who had this accident and is now disabled. And also, like, when he treats the horse towards the horses, he's very loving towards them as well. But at the same time, there's also this element of violence because, you know, it's in the name of what he's doing, he's breaking the horses. So, mm-hmm. you know, he's, yes, he's nice towards them and he's, like, confident, like, hey, you know, But then also there's this, like, where he, you know, he just sits on the horse and he makes the horse do what he wants. And there, it's, like, this oscillation between, like, violence and tenderness that I found mm-hmm. quite interesting.
Yeah. And you can also extend that very much to the cowboy figure because, like, I mean, the world in which the cowboy lives or the world from which the cowboy came, that required that sort of, you know, toughness and never say die attitude. But then there's also the question, like, where do we go with this attitude or where do we go with this in the 21st century? So maybe some gentleness now at long last is in order.
Yes, definitely. And I also like that it's that his relationship with his father isn't like super cliched because it could have been like this because his father he gambles and like you know Brady's like well you're spending our money that we don't have but in essence like their relationship is a solid one so it's not like his father is somehow the villain in this story and I like this like it that there isn't like you know this one bad guy who makes life difficult life just is difficult because of a whole host of like things that are going on
and he is kind of the father figure is sort of set up as the classic antagonist on the one hand because he as you say he gambles and he drinks but then also on the other hand because he is kind of this obstacle or he seems like this obstacle to Brady because he tells him no don't go right because you'll kill yourself and yeah, if you look at through the lens of the classic Western tropes, it's, yeah, okay, this is one of the voices that Brady shouldn't listen to, but then in the end, like, it ends in an embrace because, yeah, father was right. Not an antagonist at all, it turns out.
Right, and like, he actually, and he also, he comes to the rodeo. He said, don't do it, you're going to kill himself, but then he's there because Brady decided, and then Brady sees them and he decides, well, I guess I should be here for my family. Yeah. And do you, because that's like a recurring theme, right? Like that the idea that you're born to do something. So that is figured in this horse that they have. It's called Apollo. And then the horse sort of, it tries to run away or something. And then it has part of the it has part of the barbed wire fence around its leg. And they can't help it. So they shoot it. And, you know, basically Brady's saying like, well, you know, and I'm only allowed to live because I'm a human, because if I was a horse, you'd have shot me because I can't do the thing that I was born to do, which is, you know, not just a rodeo, but like ride in general, because when he also shouldn't be doing that, he has like after effects from his brain injury. And I'm just wondering, like, you know, do you think like the film has convincingly shown us like why he would risk his life, especially for rodeo again?
It's a good question. From a character standpoint, there you could probably argue against that, but then also I think if you take into account the larger context of just the cultural currency that this image has, also with, for example, the boys in the supermarket coming up to him and wanting to take a picture with him, and this whole, you know, you if you're just like a or in through this lens, if you're just a person working in a supermarket, you're not something, but if you are riding the rodeo and you are this great horse trainer everybody likes, then you are somebody. And if you, again, this very American idea, you may not have a lot of money, but you are to a certain extent, you are a hero, you are an icon, you're a person people look up to, you are to a certain extent the pillar of a pillar of the community. And I think in that cultural sense, I think it makes sense. If it comes through on a character level, I'm not entirely sure, but then also there's a lot of like interiority to the characters. I feel there is a lot of stuff that is being left unsaid. And I think Brady Jandro gives a very, very good performance based on the fact that he is like not a professional actor. And I think there's enough nuance in that performance that makes me believe it ultimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's really, really good. This is very true. Like, I was, you know, I like he held your attention, I feel like, when you're watching the movie. Like, yeah, and because you don't have the Frances McDormand factor, it's not like this jarring, contrast between professional and mm-hmm. amateur, but like they're all amateurs. But I think it works really well.
Yeah. It really, really makes me want to see Songs My Brother Taught Me, Chloe Zhao's debut feature.
Yeah, I mean...
Set and filmed in the same community, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people from the writer show up in Nomadland, I think. So, like...
Oh, yeah, true.
Kat Clifford, I think, at mm-hmm. least, and one other person whose name I can't remember. But they show up as like, I know you.
Maybe just from a production standpoint, because usually, like you said, in the case of Nomadland, that Chloe Zhao wrote, directed, and edited, and she also produced, which in Nomadland, to a certain extent, is, I don't want to, like, minimize her accomplishment on the production front, but that is not something that is, like, front and center in that movie, whereas in The Rider and also in Songs My Brother Taught Me, I think it is, because her approach to both of these earlier movies is that she spent several months living in the reservation and also like getting to know the people and working with the people on the screenplay, which is less of a Werner Herzog thing, but more of a Mike Leigh thing, where you basically start with the people and then you work your way kind of collectively towards a script. And I think also from a production standpoint, that is both very interesting, and in like the case of The Rider, at least, can't judge for Songs, but I expect it will be similar there. It yields really, really strong results.
Hmm. You know, I'm wondering how all of that is going to translate into the MCU for Eternals, because it couldn't be more different.
No, it could not.
So really, I really don't know. I mean, I think it's great that she had the opportunity, because usually it's like men who are like, oh, I've had one indie hit and now I do a million-dollar blockbuster. So it's cool that she's doing it. I just wonder like what that's like. Also, like, what would her experience be like? Because, you know,
if anything, like if the only thing that comes out of Eternals at the end of the day is that she has enough money to make like 10 more The Riders, then all for it.
Yeah, true, true. Have you seen the trailer for the Eternals?
I've not. I've seen like the screenshots of there's a sunset, and it's like, oh yeah, I recognize that trope. I'll probably see the trailer when I go see Black Widow in the summer.
Yes, you probably will. Okay, so The Rider is one for you?
Yes.
Yes, also one for me.
Emphatically so.
I like it. I think I prefer it to Nomadland. Like, I felt more in there somehow.
I don't think I could choose. I think probably...
Choose,
like
Alan, choose! No.
The thing is, the heart says The Rider, but then at the end of the day, I still kind of fall back on Nomadland, but I don't know.
You don't have to choose, obviously.
I think they're both great.
Yes. Why think in oppositions? You can like many things. Yes. Okay. So before we get to the end of this episode, let's talk about what we're looking forward to. And this is going to be like a long window of time now, because the One For You podcast is going on a summer break because it's summer. Whoop, whoop. So we'll be back. Because, you know, when we miss a few episodes, it's always a long time. It takes a long time because there's only an episode every 2 weeks. We'll be back on the 25th of July. So that's quite a long time. So you have like lots to choose from, Alan. What is it that you're looking forward to?
I mean, as we were doing our pre-game discussion, I said I will choose First Cow. And I'm still choosing First Cow. But I also thought, Damn, I said First Cow once before, but then it didn't come out. But I'm still going to say it. I'm going to say it again. First Cow by Kelly Reichardt, because it is set to be, I think, the first Kelly Reichardt movie to get a cinema release in Switzerland. So it's high time, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing it on the big screen.
Excellent. So that's actually, I think, coming out the week that we're coming back. So that's like far in the future. I'm looking forward to another one, and I think I'm going to watch it tonight. It's Shiva Baby by Emma Seligman, because it's on Mubi at the moment. And it looks like it could be a cool film. It's about this young woman who reluctantly goes to sit Shiva with her family, and there are family members and exes and whatnot milling around there. So it looks like it could be a great comedy of like awkward situations.
That sounds like something I should, I mean, I've had it earmarked, but to this day I have never actually bothered to check what it's about, but it sounds very very much up my street.
Yeah, right,
gonna watch it.
Yes, do it. And that was it for this episode of the One For You podcast. Alan, thank you so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure.
So as I said, we'll be on our summer break. So in the meantime, why not go back through our back catalog and, you know, see if you can find anything interesting to tide you over during this break. And to keep up to date with the podcast, you know, to figure out like what it is that we're going to be talking about when we return, follow us on social media, where we're at One For You Pod. Hear you next time.
Bye.
Bye.